too good to be true in the first reaction you had when you heard about this company.
Volume production in a cost-effective way. The global potential is enormous here. Having you with us on the journey to make Earth green again.
Surfing, sand, desert control.
Technology to feed the growing population of this planet.
Is it a virtual bell ringing ceremony these days? He is the CEO of the greenest company I have ever come across, and I have been on the sell side for more than two decades. His company has the slogan, Making Earth Green Again. He's based in Stavanger, which is maybe most known for being the oil capital of Europe. Interesting place for a green company. He is likely to tell us a little bit about the link between oil and green deserts. He is the CEO of one of the newest companies coming to the Oslo Euronext Growth Stock Exchange, listed on or about 14th of April, that's next Wednesday. Full disclosure, Arctic, of course, advised on the private placement ahead of the listing. So, Mr. Green, I could call you Mr. Green, Ole Kristian Sivertsen, CEO of Desert Control. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
So I have to ask you, when did you first hear about the company, Desert Control, and what did you think then?
Well, I heard about the company, I think it was in late 2018, early 2019. I knew one of the co-founders who reached out to me and started to talk about it, and well, basically, in the beginning, it was a little bit like this sounds too good to be true, really, when I first heard about it. But then when I started to look into it and understood the science, it really compelled me to join the company not long thereafter.
So you joined the company in 2019, but the company has been around for 12 years. Could you give maybe a brief background on the history since, once that 2006-07 first patent approved?
Sure. So the company was actually established in the autumn of 2017, based then on 12 years of R&D and several field trials done by the inventor, Mr. Christian C. Olesen, and his son. And they've traveled around the world to many exotic countries and desert areas and trialed and tested the technology. And that was what led to forming the company in 2017. So based on that, the first part of the journey after the company was founded was to ensure that you also had some external validation of the great project. I mean, there are some amazing video clips and pictures of transformation of desert areas and stuff like that from their early stage journey. They are just amazing, right? But in order to build a company, you need a little bit more than that. You also need some independent scientific organizations to validate the findings, to ensure there is no bias and to really get that needed stamp of quality to what you do prior to raising serious capital and stuff like that. So that was the beginning, really, of the founding of the company and the journey through external validation that later on led to raising some capital in the end of 2019, and then the next step that we're just passing through now.
So let me come back to the Stavanger background, because I went to the website of visitrogalandandryfylke.com, and I read with great interest, the beaches at Jæren are likely to have the best surfing conditions in Norway. Summer and early autumn are times that are in general good for beginners. Warm weather, I'm not sure about that, but it says on their homepage, warm water and relatively small wave sizes are good reasons to try surfing here for the first time. So surfing, sand, what made people in Stavanger area look for Desert Control?
Well, I can tell you we did not start out to control the sandy beaches of the Stavanger area. And I know that our tourist offices, they are probably good at marketing them. I think they are beautiful. I'm not sure if the water is so warm, but they are good for the eye for sure. When it comes to the desert control journey, though, it's A lot of people ask me, why on earth does a company from Stavanger, Norway, come up with an idea to combat a desertification when you are that far from the desert? The answer is, it's that liquefying clay, which is the core of what we do, has a strong background in terms of engineering competence and skill set from the oil and gas industry. And there is a link here with how the idea actually came about, because this really started with Olsen identifying some challenges that a group of scientists down in Egypt had. And they were looking at ways to find a solution for applying clay to the sandy soils around the river banks of the Nile. Now, why would you want to do that? Well, it turns out that clay is a natural component to enriching soils and used in agriculture for thousands of years. And it used to be enriched naturally by the River Nile prior to the building of the Aswan Dam. So when they built the Aswan Dam in the mid-60s, all the clay and silt minerals stopped behind the dam there. And as a result, 10, 15 years later, the region went into regression and desertification. And what used to be the most fertile area of the entire region turned into desert land. So that's how it started. And then, you know, the scientists were looking at ways they were using, you know, excavators and hundreds of people with spades and digging equipment to try to work the clay into the ground. And the idea was, why do you not just liquefy it like we've done in drilling mud and oil and gas since you built the Aswan Dam, basically. And that's where it all began. Of course, there were lots of challenges because you couldn't use a drilling mud kind of solution directly because you need agents and various chemicals and things that are not possible to use in a green ecosystem out in nature and for farming and agriculture, etc. So to overcome these challenges and develop a process that can do this to create a 100% pure natural product out of this was how this came about, and it's really because of the strong engineering skill sets and competences and the link to the oil and gas industry that this idea was born.
It's interesting. And I see on your homepage, you have a board with six people, of which three have a background in the oil industry. I remember Guy Elvik, he used to be the CFO of Revus, which was a company that was listed on the Oslo Stock Exchange before. We used to do road shows with him. Nice guy. You also have this guy, Arnfinn Matre, who's also an oil executive formerly, and so with Olsen. So would you say that the majority of the people in your company have a sort of an oil-related background, or...?
I would say that there is a good mix here. So we've attracted quite a lot of people from the oil and gas industry, also amongst the staff and the team. And in our board, you'll see quite a bit of oil and gas experience and background. But we do also have quite a bit of sort of scientific team members, the PhDs in soil science and material science and stuff like that in the areas that are more on the agricultural side. So it's really about mixing skill sets and competences, right? So you take ideas from one sector and you kind of infuse them together with skills and educational backgrounds from another sector, and then something magic happens in between.
Another sector is interesting because your chairman, Mr. Knut Nesse, used to be the CEO of Skretting, which is a large part of Nutreco, which is a Dutch-listed, quite large fish feed conglomerate. And I also noticed there was an article in Finansavisen last week that said that some of your new shareholders include Kverva chef Helge Moen and also SalMar veteran Leif Inge Nordhammer. Of course, I checked on Bloomberg. SalMar is actually up 770% last 10 years versus Nasdaq only 360%. So that's a pretty good reference to have with you. Why do you think the salmon industry people are attracted to Desert Control?
Well, let me start with our chairman, Knut Nesse, and his background. It's quite relevant to a lot of what we do, right? So having worked within that industry and actually, you know, food production and, you know, finding the optimal formulations of fish feed, for example, has quite some similarities with optimizing the treatment of soil in order to generate the best yield in the different types of soil conditions and for the different types of crops that you have out in the world. So there is a massive, let's say, transferable skill set from having worked within that industry. And remember, you know, a lot of the potential for this technology is in the area of solving some of the large challenges we have when it comes to food security and being able to grow enough food to feed the growing population of this planet. So from that perspective, I think sort of food security, there is something in common with the salmon industry and the food industry in general. And then I also think that some of them see a very interesting aspect to a technology that actually has a background from the oil and gas industry that can contribute to reducing water scarcity and also combat climate change combined with this food security element. And I think those are some of the greatest challenges that lies ahead of us for this planet and for humanity in general. So seeing simple solutions that can solve these kind of challenges in this segment, I think, makes it very attractive for these people.
Excellent. And coming back to your company, you're still, I would say, fairly early stage, revenues of around 10 million crowns in 2021, but you have very ambitious growth targets, which we'll touch upon. You have, I think, indicating 120 million in 2022 and then up to more than 800 million in 2025. Now, obviously, there's also always uncertainty and risk involved, but I think we need to touch upon the growth prospects and clearly to what extent. You also mentioned too good to be true in the first reaction you had when you heard about this company, but to what extent are you proven and to what extent are you sure that you will actually go out and make the desert green again and make money on the way in the next few years?
Well, I think the reason why we are now at an inflection point where we're ready for the next growth part of our journey is because we have, as I said a little bit before, focused a lot over the last couple of years on achieving solid external validation of the technology. We've worked with recognized independent research organizations, ICBA, International Center for Biosaline Agriculture in the UAE, who have conducted validation for this technology for the use on green landscapes as well as for agriculture. So our two main segments, we have validated that this liquid clay holds water, pun intended. And we've also, since we raised capital at the end of 2019, spent that capital very wisely on ensuring that we can actually scale up the technology for volume production in a cost-effective way. Because back in 2018, 2019, and through the major part of 2020, we all only had laboratory scale production capabilities, only ability to produce it at very low volumes, precision production. So that's the third area where we have succeeded through 2020. We have unlocked the scalability potential of mobile factories that can produce large volumes of this liquid clay out in the field. So that we don't need to transport the liquid clay around the world. We can actually produce it and process it and prepare it and also deploy it directly at the same site. So based on that, we now have the first industrial prototype of volume production in the field, showing very, very positive results. We are anticipating to finalize the second iteration of this prototype at the end of May, early June. And based on that and locking the design in, we'll be able to manufacture what we call production clusters by the fourth quarter of this year that will create the foundation for the revenues that we anticipate to create in the following year. So we have the steps in place. We have validated that the liquid clay is working in a positive way with solid references for landscaping and for agriculture, and we know how to produce it at scale and volume. That's why we raise capital now to push this through to the next stage and start industrializing and commercializing.
So just two questions and as a follow-up, do you expect the very desert-dominated area of the Gulf, you mentioned UAE and of course Saudi Arabia, is, looks on the map like one big desert at least to me, and so do you expect this area to be, in terms of geography, your most important source of revenue the next few years? And second question, is it golf courses that you're making green and beautiful, or are you making the desert into food manufacturing, food producing areas in the beginning?
Yeah, so we have started in the UAE in 2018 because we needed a place to really validate the technology in desert conditions and very challenging climatic conditions where you have everything from flash rain to sandstorms and everything to really, really get the best or worst conditions to test the technology in. We were not able to find them at the beaches of the Savagre area, but we for sure found them in the UAE in the desert landscape there. So that makes it easy for us to have the first foothold for revenue generation in that region. We could also recently see that the Saudi government announced huge plans for the re-greening of the region, something that would account for a offset of, I think their ambition was like 2.5% of all the global carbon uptake to offset CO2 emissions by planting trees and greening that region, something that can have a solid impact. We're also in parallel starting a feasibility study together with a university on the west coast of the U.S., and our plan is to enter that market in early next year. We see a solid market potential there due to the high water scarcity, the growing costs of water. Water futures are actually trading in California as of January this year. So there's a lot of demand in those areas. But if you look on a bigger scale, I mean, there are already 110 countries in the world that are exposed to desertification, significant droughts that are just draining the land and leaving productive areas barren and turning them into wasteland and slowly degrading them into deserts. So the global potential is enormous here. And I think we will definitely have significant revenue coming out of that Middle Eastern North Africa region and also the west coast of the U.S. But this will really fuel our capabilities to also start to deploy this to other countries around the world.
When you go out and sell your patented product that makes the desert green, is it an advantage to be listed, do you think? Is that was that part of the process that made you consider the Euronext Growth listing and, of course, choosing Arctic as an advisor? Is that the best part about being listed, that you have a little bit like a flashlight? Someone actually, every contract will be, I guess, on the screen?
Well, I think the listing in itself it is not a goal. It's really marking the inflection point in which we're at, moving from a startup to a true scale-up with ambitions to grow into something that is really big. I think it's really one of these market opportunity areas where you could say there is true unicorn potential. If you think about the annual cost of desertification measured in loss of land productivity, according to the United Nations, that is like $490 billion annually. So if you think about that in terms of what is the market potential out there, I think that's where you see the reason why we want to really be on a platform like this, because it's something that gives us also, as we move through the different growth stages to grow in this huge market area, access to capital. We've also experienced a lot of requests from a lot of climate impact enthusiasts. I mean, monthly and weekly, we are getting, you know, private individuals coming to us and saying, we want to be part of this journey in some kind of way. Is there a way to buy some shares and be part of it? I think being listed gives you access to actually include enthusiastic people like that on the journey. And then there is, of course, the stamp of quality in terms of making sure that you build a company with a solid foundation when it comes to governance and these kind of things from day one. And I think getting to being listed is and raising capital in front of it is also a challenging process in terms of it takes a lot of time, especially for the CEO and the CFO of the company, and you have a business to run on the side. But in order to tackle that, that's why we work with great facilitators who help us manage the process in an excellent way.
Appreciate that. So I thank you, Ole Kristian, on behalf of the Arctic team. And I think we're excited. Do you think you will be, is it a virtual bell ringing ceremony these days? You will be on video, I guess. You will not be physically at the stock exchange opening bell on Wednesday?
Yeah, it's going to be a virtual bell ringing round, we will be live on a video feed to do the opening on that morning. So stay tuned for that.
Best of luck, and again, congratulations on the most green company we have ever worked with award, and may all those deserts turn into green graceland going forward. Thank you very much, Ole Kristian Sivertsen.
Thank you, and thanks a lot to you and the entire team as well. We are excited about having you with us on the journey to make Earth green again.
Excellent.
This podcast has been prepared by Arctic for information purposes only. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered professional advice. The information provided in this podcast is not intended to constitute investment advice, nor is the information intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any financial instrument. Relevant and specific professional advice should always be obtained before making any investment or credit decision. It is important to note that past performance is not indicative of future results. This podcast does not fulfill the criteria for preparing investment research and must be seen as marketing material. All information submitted during this podcast is obtained from public sources that Arctic believes to be reliable, but which Arctic has not independently verified. Arctic makes no guarantee, representation, or warranty as to its accuracy or completeness. No liability whatsoever is accepted for any direct or indirect, including consequential, loss or expense arising from the use of information from this podcast.